Hi, I'm Henry Reingen. With me is Dr. Roy Clauser, and we're going to be doing this Logic Light class, or actually Logical Fallacies, Spying Them, Understanding Them. Many of you have actually participated in Logical Fallacies, or you've listened to Logical Fallacies. So where does Logical Fallacy study come from, anyway? Who started this?
Ancient Greeks and the philosophers there codified rules for telling whether arguments were valid or they weren't. A valid argument is one which, if the premises are true, the conclusion must be.
Okay, so that's okay. Where it started.
So that, but then they also cataloged the mistakes people made about reasoning, and they called them fallacies. And they taught them to students so that who wanted to become lawyers.
Okay.
So that they could trick juries.
Oh.
They didn't teach them to so as to avoid them. They taught them so that they could pull the wool over people's eyes. So that they had a terrible reputation. These people became known as sophists.
Okay.
And they took tutor money to train you to be a lawyer in court. And one of the things that they would teach you is the fallacies so that you could use them to deceive juries or judges.
Wow. Hey, now I was listening to your ancient philosophy class, and I was hearing this about a jury was big back in the Greek days.
Oh, yeah. In ancient Athens, a jury consisted of 413 people so that nobody could afford to bribe the majority. So it was an odd number, so they couldn't have a tie vote, and a big number, so you couldn't bribe them.
Hmm.
There's a wonderful story about one of the sophists took a student, and the student said, "I don't have any money, but when I win my first case in court, I'll pay you." And then the student just never took a case to court. So the sophist sued him, and in court, he argued, said to the jury, "If you find for me, he should have to pay me because you said I won this case.
Right.
If you find for him, he's won his first case in court, and he should pay me. So either way, he should pay me." So the student got up and said, "If you find for me, I should not have to pay because you found for me. And if you find for him, I still haven't won my first case in court, so I shouldn't have to pay." How would you like to be on that jury?
Now, I did overhear, too, that the 12 number was interesting, like British common law. What was the deal with that again?
Well, it was for no other reason than Jesus had 12 disciples. So they decided 12 was the number of people they'd have on a jury. It could very easily have been something different.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the whole notion of having an odd number so that there's never a tie vote makes some sense.
Right.
But then in capital cases, we require anyway a unanimous jury anyhow.
Right.
So.
Okay, so we're going to talk about these fallacies. The first one we have here is the ad hominem fallacy. So what is that?
Ad hominem means that when somebody gives you reasons to think a conclusion is true, you try to criticize the argument. Instead of attacking the reasons, you attack the person.
Oh.
So one example that stands out in my memory is I read about Winston Churchill making a speech when he was running for office after the Second World War. And he got up and said, "Here's what we need to do with the British economy." And somebody from the crowd yelled, "Didn't you just have to declare bankruptcy?" Now, that was true.
Right.
But it's arguing against him, not his reasons.
Okay.
The reasons he was giving for this budget plan of his may have been good or not, but they changed the subject when they attacked him instead of the reasons he was giving. That's an ad hominem argument. Argument to the man.
Right.
Instead of to the reasons.
Well, and a lot of times people do that in ministry. You'll see that where somebody will come into counseling, okay, and the issue that they have is the issue they have, but they'll start ad hominem in a way. You know, they'll like, "Well, so and so's fault," or it's not really the issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
So people do that.
Oh, yeah.
And if you were to spot an ad hominem argument, what are some of the characteristics of an ad hominem argument?
Well, it has that one main characteristic, that you attack the person.
Not the person.
And it has nothing to do with the reasons the person is giving for the conclusion they like. So, or it's just a discussion of an issue. Maybe nobody has yet even put forward a proposed policy or anything, but you start attacking the person in order to suggest the person isn't qualified to have an opinion on this subject or something. That's still all ad hominem.
I remember one time I was counseling, and there was an uncle that was not liked. And the uncle was actually pretty sharp. But because he was not liked, no matter what he said, was wrong. I mean, it didn't matter if he was speaking, like, you know, but that is an ad hominem argument, right? I mean, ad hominem distraction.
Yeah.
Because he had many merited things to say.
Right.
But he did
instead
not
of considering them on and off the merits, they attack the person, dismiss everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, good. So, good. We're going to plow through these. So that's the end of the first session.
Okay.